Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Truth of Movies, Wrinkle in Time, Disney's interdimensional fantasy epic does empowerment, but Disney entertain? We'll be finding out. Unsane, Steven Soderbergh's paranoid thriller, would unseen be the best way to leave it? We check out Chinese animation Have a Nice Day, featuring a missing bag of cash and a cast of small-town crooks. And go mad for George Cukor's Gaslight, Charles Boyer driving Ingrid Bergman out of her mind. It's Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Hello, listener. Thanks for joining us, or if you're just stopping by for the first time, welcome aboard. Here's where we find out about which of the latest releases you need to make time to go and see, and maybe one from the vaults that you might want to dust off and have a look at and have a chat with us about what you think. That's Film Club, that's coming up later on, but we'll start very, very shortly with the reviews with today's two reviewers, who are Hannah Woodhead.
Hello.
Hi, Hannah. And David Jenkins.
Hey, hey.
David, you and I are contractually obliged to disagree with each other.
No, we're not.
Oh, I see what you did there. Hey, here's a quick comment from AstroWiz. By the way, if you want to get in touch, it's truthandmovies@tcolondon.com or at LWLies on Twitter or Facebook, etc. and so on. But anyway, AstroWiz got in touch and he says, "Ooh, there's good news and bad news for James. There is a Tekken film, which I was wondering about, but I watched it last year and it's terrible. In Yorkshire, by the way," jokes AstroWiz, "Tekken is also a trilogy starring Liam Neeson." And he then goes on to say, "It was interesting hearing our views on Alicia Vikander, and she has quite a flat tone to her voice, which maybe gives the illusion she's giving a flat performance." Interesting point about, you know, people's vocal range and also the way that accents influence your appreciation of the craft of acting, which is a big issue for me with Jeremy Irons in Red Sparrow. But I did actually want to bring up another film in relation to AstroWiz's comment, which is Tomb Raider, featuring Alicia Vikander from last week, which I was all excited for. And you and Manuela, David, were both really into it. So I went to see it the next day and it's absolute bobbins. No. I'm staggered. I mean, you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it very much. I mean, I was watching it and my justification is that I just never thought it was making too many wrong moves.
Oh, like, really? Okay.
There was something quite humane about it. I like the fact, like, for instance, like, there's a scene where she, like, fights a guy and kills him.
Yes.
And in your kind of garden variety action movie, that would be a kind of, like, you know, you'd rush past that. There would be no kind of moment of reflection or, you know. And
she's troubled by it.
But there is a kind of, there's a beat where she stopped and it's like, wow, it feels like she's, like, that actually does feel like the first time that she's maybe killed a person and is, like, actually quite troubled by it.
If so, it'd be about the only genuine moment in the film. I know we did this last week, but just so I can get this off my chest, because I came out of the cinema thinking, I all those poor listeners who might go off to see this, they should be aware that there is another view, which is that, A, the whole thing is a bit like the cutscenes from Uncharted or Tomb Raider, but more Uncharted, especially that one with the aeroplane.
Right.
And have you ever played Uncharted?
No.
Okay. People who have will know what I mean. And it's fine to play it, but you wouldn't want to sit and watch 90 minutes of it. She, Vikander, is totally lacking in charisma as the lead character. The whole storyline, which so slavishly reenacts the can we work out this puzzle plotline of the original video games, it's quite awkward and embarrassing to watch. But the biggest problem of all is Dominic West, who had such success as playing McNulty in The Wire. But this performance is pure bunk, I would suggest. No, I really thought that he was woeful in this. He obviously can't do sincere.
Okay.
Mm. But that was my view. David, you really enjoyed it. Manuela, to be fair, enjoyed it too. Hannah, have you seen this just as a kind of...
No, I don't really have any interest in watching it. Okay. I prefer to play my video games than watch them.
What's your favourite video game, Hannah?
I'm a big Fallout fan, and I'm really excited about Far Cry 5.
Whatever the latest iteration
is. I'm so excited next week. I'm really excited. I can't wait.
Maybe this is a little context into my kind of fandom of the Tomb Raider film, is that I'm actually a massive fan of the Resident Evil films, which is, I know, is probably quite an unpopular thing to say, but about a month ago, I watched all of them in a weekend. You know, I just couldn't, it was like very sort of Moorish. Yeah, I couldn't stop watching them. They're all like 90 minutes and they're quite, I actually think,
I
find them quite
the
good.
The first one being terrifying.
I mean,
I was really scared of it.
It's quite.
Do you ever play the games?
No, I've never played the games.
I wonder if that's why you enjoyed Tomb Raider and I didn't, was that it just all looked like a game that I'd played repeatedly.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, hey, listeners, you're probably keen to find out about A Wrinkle in Time. I know I am after reading Hannah's review of it in Little White Lies. So let's hear about that after this. After the disappearance of her scientist father, three astral beings send Meg, her brother, and her friend into space to try and find him. Here are two of said astral folk, played by Oprah Winfrey and Reese Witherspoon, giving Meg some thoughts to take on her way.
Meg. Troubled, problematic Meg. To you, I give the gift of your faults. You're welcome.
You do know my faults are the bad qualities, right?
Are they really? Well, then you're all set.
My gift is my command. Stay together. Don't let anyone separate you.
David Jenkins.
I think it's a well-chosen clip for a comment that I have about this film, which is the fact that for me, it felt like it had a screenplay that was entirely made up of tweets. Every line is like tweetable. It's like a little kind of cutesy aphorism, or Reese Witherspoon's "You're welcome" is like the ultimate kind of Twitter sort of lingo. And everything in this film feels like it's kind of either been taken from Twitter or has been built for usage in a sort of 140 character bite size. Chunk. So
very nicely put. It comes from a much loved young adult classic, and it's got an impressive cast as well. And yet, Hannah, in your review, you open by saying the cinemas in hell show only mediocre movies masquerading as something more, and this is that.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of talk about this film since it was announced in 2016. A lot of people saying, "Oh, this is a landmark film. This is going to be this great film for representation." Ava's the first woman of colour to be given a budget over $100 million, which that is like a lamp. That's incredible. I mean, what's incredible for me is that it's taken this long to get to that point. And of course, the lead character is a young mixed-race girl, which I think a lot of people have kind of latched onto. But for me, it's kind of pretending to be something a lot more meaningful than it actually is. I didn't really get this. The whole mantra running through is, be a warrior, but you're never... Why? Why be a warrior? It's kind of just this hollow...
Be a warrior?
Yeah.
Warrior, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry, it's a Yorkshire accent. A warrior. it was very cloying and insincere. The only character with any sort of story is Meg, and she's kind of Ava's avatar. You can tell that she cares about this one character, but the rest of it, I was just... You know, there's a 6-year-old who is so irritating. I was actively willing something bad to happen to him.
So that at least is realistic.
You know,
this has got a kind of like trigger element to it, where you've got this young precocious character called Charles Wallace, and every time they refer to him, they refer to him as Charles Wallace, and the words Charles Wallace are probably spoken about 100 times in the film. There's a bit where he goes missing in the woods and they're screaming Charles Wallace for about 5 minutes.
Just hearing David say Charles Wallace is making me like irrationally angry.
I want to actually keep saying Charles Wallace on the podcast to give listeners a sense of what that's like.
Well, the other way they could do that is by going to see the movie themselves. Would you advise against that? Is there an age group that this might appeal to?
I have no idea. I mean, an age group that maybe aren't asking that many questions with regard to kind of basic coherence and, like, you know, things making just sense, I guess. Just to backtrack a little bit, the story of the film is about a family. Chris Pine is a kind of astrophysicist patriarch, and he goes missing when Meg is young. And it turns out that he's essentially discovered this way to travel through the universe in a split second. And he's transported himself, like, you know, light years away across the other side of the galaxy to this other realm. And
but he didn't get a return ticket.
Didn't get a return ticket. And through the kind of, through reasons that I'm not entirely sure, these three witches kind of appear to Meg and say, we're going to help you get your dad back. And we're going to form this, it's a wrinkle. Uh-huh. Although it's a wrinkle in space, rather than a wrinkle in time. So even on that, the title is wrong.
These are such big concepts for a film that looks like it's aimed at quite young children. You know, if you're a sort of 7-year-old, and I would say that looking at all the sort of costume design, everything that's big and it's colourful and that's who it's aimed at, they're not really going to care about NASA or about Tesseracts. If you're older than that, it's really quite babyish. There's a whole scene where Reese Witherspoon transforms into a giant lettuce leaf, like flying around for no reason. This is
everything.
It just
in the
happens,
film
and then that's it.
It's apropos of nothing.
Yeah,
the characters will be in one kind of environment. You know, they'll be in a wheat field, and then they'll be in a kind of suburban housing conurbation for no reason. And it's meant to be a kind of, wow, it's, you know, it's a magical realm, and they're being, you know, their heads are being messed with, but it just doesn't make any sense. It's just like they're there and nothing happens, and then they're somewhere else and nothing happens. Yeah.
So Ava DuVernay,
I loved Selma, and I loved her documentary The 13th, which I think was a Netflix doc. Both of them, you felt the passion. You know, you felt that she had entirely immersed herself within the material. She, you know, she understood it, and she had a really unique way to tell the story. Mm-hmm. I just felt with this that it felt like something she was asked to do rather than something she wanted to do. I'm second guessing her motivations here, but, like, you just feel there's no connection between the material and the maker.
I think there is between the main character. I think there's a definite connection between her and Meg. But the rest of it is just, she's put so much time and effort into this one character. There's just no, there's, you know, how long is this? Is it 2 hours? It felt like it went on forever. And there's no, you know, she's in every single shot, and that's all you're interested in. So all the other things that are going on, you're just like, I don't care. Chris Pine's just crying everywhere for 2 hours.
I find it really hard to take him seriously in films.
You know, this one was really hard for me because he looks like Gary from Team America World Police.
Oh,
yeah,
that would
yeah, he
be
does
issue.
Actually. Yeah,
yeah.
I did not.
So all
that.
The way through, I was just like, oh.
If I'm looking for sort of one, you know, ray of light here, it's probably the Storm Reid's performance.
She's
as
brilliant.
Meg.
And
as Meg.
I think in the opening as well, there's a great scene where her principal's sort of called her out at school, and he's talking to her about her dad, and it's a brilliant scene. For me, my dad wasn't there when I was a kid, and I was like, oh, this performance is like incredibly nuanced for a 13-year-old to be giving. But then it doesn't really deal with these issues in any substantial way. It could have done something quite beautiful with this idea of, like, abandonment, but it doesn't. Right. As soon as Chris Pine turns up, it's like, oh, yep, everything's fine again.
That's the thing. She's actually really good at doing this sort of very terse, real drama.
Mm.
As soon as you enter into the kind of fantasy world, it's like, what the hell is going on?
Okay.
Let's
do the scores and we'll move on then.
Yes.
Yeah.
David, first of all?
I'd probably say 3, purely because I loved her DuVernay's previous two films and was hoping that she would do, you know, this seemed like quite a weird choice for her, but I was hoping she'd do something interesting with it. And I'd probably have to say 1 star.
Really?
For both. I mean, it really was
a
chore.
It really?
I mean, like...
Yeah.
Didn't do anything for me.
Okay, Hannah?
I'm afraid.
3-2-2. I don't think it's quite bad enough for a 1 for me, but it's pretty bad.
All right, we'll move on then to our second film of the week, Unsane. After an episode of stalking has left Sawyer deeply troubled, she begins to see her stalker again in unexpected places. She seeks help, but is the whole thing in her head, or is she in terrible danger?
Taking out a restraining order, normal, relocating to another city, normal. But you still see your stalker everywhere?
Rationally, I know this is my imagination, but I'm alone in a strange city and I never feel safe.
There's some more forms you need to fill out. It's just routine.
I finished my homework.
Sawyer Valentini, please follow me.
Well, look, I don't have a lot of time. I should be back at work, so what am I doing in here? Take off your clothes down to your underwear. I'm not sure what's happening here. The door's locked.
It would be better for everyone, especially yourself, if you just do as I ask.
There's been some kind of mistake.
By signing this, you've consented to voluntary commitment.
I am being held here against my will.
Do you know how many calls the cops get like that every week?
Those are from crazy people.
This, the latest from Steven Soderbergh. Hannah, you were just saying about the opening scene producing some interesting nuanced takes on a very real issue in The Wrinkle in Time. And when this film started, I was thinking, this is actually really interesting what it's done in terms of exploring what it's like to be stalked for people who haven't been in that.
Yeah,
exploring
opening,
some of the reality and the repercussions of what it actually means, beyond the fact of there being someone who's pestering you, which is a bit of a bother, the extent to which that would unsettle you and lead you to effectively change or question all aspects of your behaviour, even to the extent of moving jobs, moving cities. Unfortunately, that only lasted for the first 10, 15 minutes, and then another movie took over. I'll pitch in with my view in a second, but what did you make of this?
I really didn't like it. I love Steven Soderbergh. Really, really loved Logan Lucky. This is obviously a completely different film from that. I was quite angry about Unsane. I've seen a lot of people I very much admire love this film and have very good reasons for loving it. But for me, it was just so relentlessly nasty. And so, as a young woman who has dealt with unpleasant men, I was quite insulted by it, and insulted by this idea that Soderbergh's asking the audience to believe that she's mentally unstable. Maybe I'm projecting my feelings onto it.
I didn't have an issue with that. And in actual fact, I thought the trailer sets it up as quite an interesting psychological thriller. Does she have psychosis about this? Is she essentially inventing this in her head? And that could happen. As a premise for a thriller, I thought that was quite interesting, but I didn't think that in actual fact, Soderbergh, in the film that he's put together, really explores that. He resolves that question quite early on, and you're left with a fairly bog-standard cat and a mouse.
I think you're just waiting for bad things to happen to her after it becomes apparent what's going on. You're just waiting.
Was David one of those people who you respect who wrote good things about this?
No, because she doesn't respect me.
And I know David liked it.
Well, did you like this film?
I really liked it, yeah.
You really liked it?
Yeah. I will admit that I do have the blinders on when it comes to Steven Soderbergh, who is just someone who lays golden eggs.
Ocean's 12? Is that a golden egg?
Maybe not Ocean's 12. Yeah. The Ocean sequels were...
Did you like Side Effects?
I quite liked it, but really want to see it again.
I think this reminds me a lot of Side Effects, which I also didn't like.
These are his kind of psycho thrillers, and this critique of the film is one thing and then it's another thing and then it's another thing. And I actually found that kind of evolution quite exciting. And the sort of, you know, it's not so much a case of there are big plot twists as you go along, yeah. Although there are plot twists. But I think the film, like, it's sort of constantly changing your perception of what it is.
I don't mind that, and I like a film that evolves as it moves along. I just found the first bit, where it's dealing with the reality of what it's like to be stalked, way more interesting than the Shutter Island sub-psychological thriller that comes after.
I like the way the film deals with this idea of, like, not only are these terrible things happening, but there are corporate industries ready and waiting to exploit people
that premise is an interesting one, but I think
I felt that's a premise I'm sick of hearing, and as someone who's dealt a lot with psychiatric care, it's incredibly unhelpful to constantly have it portrayed as the villain and to have medication portrayed as, you know, this inherent evil that's gonna change who you are as a person.
That's fair. See, now this is a work of fiction,
yeah,
and as such, although I take on board what you were saying about you slightly resent the suggestion that it's her fault when she's actually been the victim. Or the, yeah, the suggestion of that.
I guess I, one of the things I liked was that ambiguity.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it didn't
for me
land you on one side of, and you know, you were guessing all the way through.
And in the trailer, they played on that nicely, and I thought, well, this would be fun. And whoever directed the trailer should really have been given this film to do, because I thought Soderbergh made an utter hash of it.
I suspect that Soderbergh directed the trailer, actually.
Really?
Yes.
Is he very hands-on like that?
I think he does tend to edit. I mean, I think he edits
his own
films.
He should have left it like that, then, really. So, okay, just to say briefly, I know what you're saying about Soderbergh being a man with an extraordinary body of work behind him. Mm. I don't like all of his films. Even Logan Lucky I wasn't really on board with, but I did respect it as a well-made film. This was so poorly made, and I know it was done on an iPhone, which I'm struggling to see the reason behind, except as a kind of experiment.
It's an experiment that Sean Baker did, like,
sure,
2 years ago, and he did it way better.
But okay, he wanted to do it. Maybe it gives him a flexibility. But in terms of craft, it was so poor. I struggled to actually believe that it was made by him and he hadn't just put his name on it. Things like the plot lines, there's a major plot hole in the middle of this, which you have to swallow to kind of accept the reality of the rest of it. And it just so defies belief that one thing at the centre of the whole story could have happened. The main thing is that just in terms of the technique, I don't know, she might be crazy, so we'll go for lots of close-up shots of her face so that the whole thing gets a bit fisheye. It's really cheesy. It's like a TV movie, this, and not a good one.
I disagree in the harshest terms imaginable. I know you teed this up at the beginning of the show, that we don't tend to get on. We don't tend to agree on everything.
Don't tend to get on.
Sorry, no, Freudian slip there. But the I actually thought the technical aspects of this film was exceptional.
Like, really exceptional?
I thought that it felt like watching a kind of modern version of The Shining. You had these incredible like tracking shots down the corridors. There were a couple of kind of trick shots in there. When there's a scene where someone has some drugs and you get a kind of trippy sequence.
Yeah, well done.
But that's the only thing that he does. And he manages to sort of create this atmosphere of dread through doing very little, just by moving the camera, where he places the lighting. One of the scariest shots I've seen in a long time is just an amazing shot of a character just framed simply with a light behind them. So you can't let their face is completely blacked out. And it's kind of terrifying. It's like, you know, it gives this film the element of a kind of ghost story. What you might see as a plot hole, I'm not sure what you're referring to, but...
The presence of a character.
Well, I think that there could be a kind of, you know, fantastical reading of the film that you might take on.
Well, you're doing a lot of extra work in order to make his plot work, though.
Everything is very left with question marks and ellipses.
Well,
and
I certainly had some question marks at the end of this.
But that's for me, that makes a really interesting, great movie. It's the places that leaves you with questions rather than answers.
I would concede that this was very atmospheric, in that I too felt the feeling of being trapped inside somewhere where I couldn't use my phone.
Yeah, I felt the same. The girl behind me, when I saw it, was... I mean, I didn't like it. She hated it. I could hear her having a very visceral reaction to how much she hated the film.
It's really divisive film, actually. It's like there doesn't seem to be any kind of middle ground on this one, which, yeah.
I think people that love it, and people that hate it.
You can't really judge a film in terms of, like, how it fits into a kind of the news cycle, I guess, because, you know, films outlive that. And
I've seen a lot of people calling it this, like, why it's the film we need right now. And I'm like, but no, not really.
You know, I'll admit to maybe being one of those people.
Why do we need this film right now?
Well, I just thought there is a kind of...
The Me Too movement.
Yeah, there's a kind of a woman who is kind of oppressed consistently in very kind of nasty and quite kind of ingenious ways.
So what's he saying about it?
In other words, if he's addressing this very real issue, what does he do?
Well,
he spends 5 minutes at the start looking at what that actually means to her, but then goes off in a kind of half-Hitchcocked terror in an asylum.
I think I said this before on the show. It's not enough for a film to show me horrible things happening to a woman. It has to say something else about it.
Uh-huh.
I'm avoiding spoilers here, but I think the final shot of the film is the kind of commentary on everything that comes before it.
Oh, God, no, I thought that was awful.
Anyway.
Hannah. Anticipation?
Yeah. 4.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then? Then what happened?
2.
Uh-huh.
2. And that's me being kind.
Even though I've gone to the
to bat for
I've
it.
Gone to bat for this one. I would say that I loved Logan Lucky, and I think there was something kind of magical about that film, and this does feel like a kind of, quick, nasty thriller.
Yeah, it's a bit dashed off.
Not dashed off. Don't you put words into my mouth. And yeah, I would say that it's probably fours across the board for me. It wouldn't be in my top tier of Soderbergh, but I'm primed and juiced to see this again.
Right. I loved the trailer, so I'd give my anticipation a four, and I think he's got a great future in making trailers, Soderbergh, if indeed it was him. But I'd say that probably a two at the time and a one afterwards, because it's a film that sat and festered ever since I finally struggled out the...
You guys.
The script. Yeah. Not a fan.
I guess Logan Lucky, though. Ah, it's a great film.
So, a quick message here from Toby Owens, who says, "Hi, all. Just finished watching Annihilation after listening to last week's pod. I'm so glad you reviewed it. I'd almost certainly have missed it without you mentioning. But what an incredible watch. I do agree it would have been phenomenal on the big screen, and for that I'm a bit sad. But on the other hand, I'm not sure I've ever been so gripped when watching a film in my own home before. When Bright was released in December, I had lost hope in Netflix. But this has changed my mind. Could this be a good thing?" Is the kind of message of the second half of Toby's email there. The fact that Netflix is an environment, is a location there for things that otherwise might have disappeared off the release schedules.
It's the million-dollar question, really. I think a lot of people in the industry are probably going to be looking at Annihilation's release under a microscope and trying to determine whether it was a good thing, it was a bad thing, whether it was worthwhile, whether it was kind of maligning this artwork that was made for cinema, or whether actually it found an audience that it may have otherwise not found by people who were unwilling to go and pay to see it at the cinema.
But right. It is getting a limited release in the UK, is that right, Hannah?
Very, very, very limited. I think Every Man have put it in 5 screens across the country for like one night only, which is just ridiculous.
Well, next up, spot of Chinese animation, Have a Nice Day. Lui Zhan brings us this self-written, self-directed, self-animated story of a petty criminal who gets into hot water when he steals a sum of money from the local crime boss. As he flees the repercussions, a succession of characters are drawn into the hunt for the missing money. It's a Tarantino-esque plotline, I felt, but almost quite a Shaggy Dog-esque treatment of the ensuing action.
Yeah, absolutely. It has the feel of a kind of 90s indie crime movie and sort of displaced into this kind of quite tumble-down Chinese rural landscape.
Steve Buscemi could have played one of the parts.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, a lot of people have compared it to Tarantino. I think there is a comparison to Pulp Fiction on the poster because it is this kind of ensemble of characters all getting mixed up around this one thing happening. And it reminded me more of actually Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah.
It's very kind of laconic, and it has all these characters who are just sort of like chatting and, you know, watching the world go by as this kind of drama unfolds around them. And I thought it was really funny above all else.
It's just got an interesting approach to the animation. It's very minimalist.
Yeah, it's very stripped back, very sort of speaks for itself. There's something refreshingly unflashy about it, which I really liked. Dave and I were having a conversation in the office when I watched it, and I said I don't really get this Tarantino comparison everyone's making, because it is like a lot less explosions and then people talking really fast and like, you know, silly things happening. It's kind of more snarky.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that it's not set in a big city. It could have easily been Shanghai, but it's really nice to see it set in this small town where you get the impression that this thing is just happening and the characters in the rest of the town don't really care. They're not really bothered. And it gives you this sense of like everything that's happening to these characters is so important to them, but they are so small in the grand scheme of things. It was wasn't one I knew about until I had to watch it for work. And I was really glad I did. I think it's definitely worth seeking out if you're not familiar with MUBI. And I saw it on a laptop screen, but I imagine it'd be far more enjoyable on a cinema screen.
Yeah. Although, as I say, it's very, very simplistic, the animation approach that Louis Chan.
I think it almost has the feel of like flash art, you know, like flash on computers.
Uh-huh.
It's very kind of, it's got a kind of computerized element to it.
At times it seemed almost as if he was on a dare to see how long he could go without actually animating anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But I how think little that, he could do. Maybe he'd just have a static shot and just have some steam off one part. Or
But I think that's really nice. I mean, it's just it makes it really atmospheric and enhances this idea of it's quite, you know, it's this quite kind of lazy, nothing happening town. You know, I think that I think it's hilarious that like most of the action, or the kind of, I guess the sort of hub of the action, is this kind of bizarre, mostly empty internet cafe with all these old computers there and you know, these characters going to this same terminal and like uncovering the plot from people who haven't like bothered to log out. And the setup of the story is a guy who just randomly decides to mug one of his fellow kind of con men. And
no, he works for a construction site.
Sorry.
Oh, is he? Oh, we were taking different takes on that.
I thought he was
I thought he worked at the building site.
Oh, right.
Maybe he left the building site.
Maybe
I thought he worked at the building site, but he'd taken classic, like,
because he knew about this thing that was happening, and he steals this money with a view to sort of
helping
a friend. And
can we not say that it's to fund his girlfriend's botched plastic surgery? Because that's hilarious. That is funny.
It does say that in the synopsis.
Oh, all right, so okay.
He's the most kind of tragically inept criminal. You watch these crime films and, you know, there's all this kind of like, you know, these super, you know, like Thomas Crown style criminals who, you know, they know every angle. They know where all the security cameras are. They're sort of like dancing over laser beams and stuff like this. This guy is like...
He's more at the Cohen end, I think.
Yeah, he's more kind of like... You know,
although there is a proper criminal in this.
Yes.
Yeah. There is a proper criminal in this with a nod to Le Samurai.
Yes, there is.
I got that one.
And yes.
The hat and the Mac. Yes. I felt that was a Delon thing. I'm not sure. Interestingly, this was selected to be in competition at the Annecy International Animation Film Festival last year, but the Chinese government requested the work be withdrawn. And when the producer of the film, Chen Yang, backed up their request, the organisers decided to take it out of competition out of fear for his safety and that of Lui Zhang and the other people involved in the film.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because today there was news that the Chinese government now, under Xi Jinping, is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know, but you better get used to saying it.
Yes. They've taken control over all sort of censorship of cinema festivals and production in China now.
Oh,
so it's all come under the sort of centralized party control. So
under the propaganda department.
Yes.
So if people wanted to see the movie the Chinese government doesn't want you to see, where could they do that?
Well, at cinemas from Friday. But also, if you're super excited and you're listening to this on Thursday, you could come to the Genesis Cinema in Mile End / Bethnal Green at 6 o'clock to come and see a special Little White Lies and MUBI endorsed screening with a amazing Q&A with the guys who did the soundtrack to it. Soundtrack to it, a group called the Shanghai Restoration Project.
Nice.
So that'll be a nice extra added bonus. So, yeah.
Okay.
And you get a free 1 month trial of MUBI if you get a ticket.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Hannah, what kind of scores would you give this?
I think it's a solid 3-4-4.
3-4-4?
Same, I would say. I mean, I hadn't really heard much about it. In fact, it was at Berlin and I'd heard some people say it wasn't very good. So
really?
I sort of didn't watch it for a while. And then when I eventually did catch up with it, I was like, oh, bloody hell, that was brilliant.
Yeah. So. I'd say maybe a 3-4. It's such a different film. It's very much unlike anything else, certainly in terms of animation.
Mm-hmm.
And there are parallels with a lot of American filmmaking, I guess, but it, being a Chinese film, I think that made it even more exotic, the fact that it wasn't a classic slice of Eastern exoticism.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, good. All right. Next up, Gaslight in the Little White Lies Film Club.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
After the tragic death of her guardian aunt, Paula, played by Ingrid Bergman, travels to Italy where she is swept off her feet by Gregory, played by Charles Boyer. But when the pair return to London, the dream romance turns into something darker and Paula begins to question her own grip on reality.
Paula, you remember our first days? You remember Italy?
There have been times when I thought I only dreamed those days.
Come closer, Paula. Closer. Look into my eyes. If I ever meant anything to you, and I believe I did, then help me, Paula. Give me another chance. Look, in the drawer of that cupboard over there, there is a knife. Get it and cut me free.
Gaslight, then. What did listeners make of it? Hannah?
We've got a comment from Angus. I really enjoyed watching a film noir-esque movie that had an almost total non-reliance on physical violence to build up the nefarious antagonist.
That's a good point. It's all in her head, or is it?
I think it is interesting to see a film where he's not the protagonist is not sort of having to resort to much more than a whispered word in the lady's ear.
And it's a film as well that sparked an entire genre of psychological oppression, isn't it? Gaslighting someone is now a thing.
It really is. Yeah. And I mean, the reason why we picked this actually is because it has that link to your favourite, Unsane, which is again about a woman who is kind of being, I guess, manipulated in that way.
Right. Or is she?
Or is she? But I mean, one of the things that is beloved in Gaslight, in this George Cukor film, is the performances. I think the three central performances were all nominated for Oscars, and Ingrid Bergman won hers.
Really? Right. So I can understand why Charles Boyer was nominated for his. I'm slightly surprised about Joseph Cotten getting nominated for an Oscar. Is that the other one you're talking of?
No, Angela Lansbury.
Oh, Angela Lansbury?
Yeah, no.
She was nominated for an Oscar?
Yeah, yeah.
As the Saucy Wench?
Yeah, yeah.
Saucy Wench.
That was her debut
saucy
film role.
Cockney Wench, yeah.
Cockney... But niece to Dick Van Dyke Cockney
Wench.
But
there's a really great scene where her and Charles Boyer have a kind of discussion together, which is really, like, it's great.
They discuss going to the music hall, I think.
Exactly, yeah.
Going
to the music hall, air quotes. That's what they used to call it back then.
A lot of people still do.
Yes, okay.
So, that's nice. And Ingrid Bergman won, and she was terrific.
Yes.
I was slightly troubled by Joseph Cotten's role as an Edwardian detective at Scotland Yard.
Yeah, I mean, he was more kind of, I guess, he's the sort of plot cipher. He's the sort of ray of hope that kind of is happening in the background. But all the kind of good stuff is happening between Bergman and Boyer, where he's just... You know, everything.
Wearing her down.
Wearing her down and preying on her fragility at every turn. Should I read out some more?
Yes, please.
So, yeah, just on the performances, it's amazing. Right up there with Ingrid Bergman's best performance in Hitchcock's Notorious,
right,
which has a very sort of similar vibe. And Sam Learmonth says that we should check out the original that Hollywood remade.
Yes.
And then tried to buy up all the copies of.
Right, this is curious.
It's
so
good.
Just 4 years before Cukor's 1944 production, there'd been a British version of the original stage play Gaslight, which they tried to destroy.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I love this. They tried to gaslight England.
Damn. That's a bit harsh. Why would they try and do that?
to look like they've just...
You often get rival productions at the same time, or even remakes or reboots, but they don't usually go and try and erase all evidence of a previous... Artistic.
Yeah, that's odd, because you generally want the fans of the original property to come on board with the new versions, but, you know, maybe
Sam
not for this one.
Sam can get in touch and give us some more info about that. I'd be intrigued.
I think that requires deeper research.
Yeah. I'm going to make a movie about that now.
Okay. Well, all right, excellent. Beyond Notorious, this also made me think a bit of Rebecca, all the fog and the kind of surly... house staff and that kind of thing.
Well, I think one of the elements of the film that it's kind of known for and has helped it kind of endure over the years is that it's kind of when we talk about gothic movies, this is like, you know, considered along with like Rebecca, one of the absolute classics of like gothic cinema. And, you know, Charles Boyer's kind of moustache twirling. I'm choosing my words carefully here because I don't want to give away what he does in the film. But like,
I think most people will have seen it.
Yeah, I guess most people.
He's
will
very
have
Machiavellian.
Yeah, he's a sort archetype. Of like, is he a criminal? Is he, you know, he's a nasty piece of work, I guess. But yeah, that kind of the fact that it's sort of set in this old house that is haunted in its own peculiar way.
There's a great bit at the beginning where where Bergman's character's travelling and there's this busybody on the train like telling her about the house and and she's like going into all the details about the horrible things that happened there. I thought it was a really nice touch. I wasn't expecting that at all. It was really funny.
But it is a kind of like, yeah, mixing the kind of, I think the gothic element is the sort of taking the ingredients of the classic ghost story and making it into something very real.
Mm. It's incredibly atmospheric. The bit where I guess it would have been Cotton's character, is talking to Bergman about the gas lamps, and she turns to him and she goes, "You can see it too." And it's like the whole thing is just, and it is totally the performances that do it.
Yeah.
It's incredibly... atmospheric and scary.
Yeah, her kind of performance where she's like the dynamic range. She's like elated one moment, then she's crying the next, and she's elated like it, all within like 2 minutes or something. She's going back and forth because he's just like he has her on a it's like a yo-yo. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Can you have someone on a yo-yo?
I was just thinking that sounds like my house most days of the week.
Oh right, okay.
But then you know, gaslighting central. Well, many thanks if you got in touch with your thoughts. I hugely enjoyed that little trip back to the archives, and I wonder what we're going to have for Film Club next week. Is it another old black and white classic?
In a way.
All right.
So, in celebration of the new film by Mr. Steven Spielberg, we've decided to revisit fan favourite Hook, his, you know, slightly eccentric retelling of the Peter Pan story with...
Robin
the
Williams.
Late Robin Williams.
Late, great. Eat your heart out, you crinkled, wrinkled, fat egg.
You're a very ill-mannered young man.
You're
you know
a slug-eating worm.
Come on, you can do better than that.
Can't believe you're encouraging me.
Yeah, show me your fastball, dust brain. You paunchy, sag-bottom puke pot.
You are a very poor role model for these kids. You know that? I bet you don't even have a fourth-grade reading level.
Hemorrhoidal suck navel.
Well, maybe a fifth-grade reading level.
Boil-dripping, beef-fart-sniffing, bubble butt.
Someone has a severe caca mouth. Do you know that?
You are a fart factory. Slug-slimed sack of rat guts and cat vomit. Cheesy scab-hicked, pimple-squeezing finger bandage. A week-old maggot burger with everything on it and flies on the side.
Who plays, Hook?
Dustin Hoffman.
Oh.
Dustin Hoffman and Bob Hoskins.
Okay, yeah. Is he Shmee? Yes. I've not seen this film since I was a kid. I remember enjoying it.
Have you seen this recently?
I've seen it quite recently, yeah.
Right.
I don't want to spoil the fun for next week. I think it's an interesting choice. I think
are you here next week, David?
I'm not here next week,
so you basically just left this bomb.
This was
Adam's choice.
Adam's choice.
Don't shoot the messenger.
First Street Fighter.
Adam is gaslighting you with with Film Club films, I think.
Okay, Rostopher's here with a suggestion. He'd like us to review Sam Peckinpah's Junior Bonner. Do you remember that one?
Oh, I love that film.
Really? So I'm not sure if we got a big pile of suggestions somewhere, but we should add Junior Bonner to that. And I wonder if soon we might start making our way through some of listeners' suggestions for Film Club.
Yeah, I think we should. Bombard us with them this week. So
if someone can suggest something good for Avengers, that would be great.
Yeah, that's
something
that would
to
actually
revisit in, at the end of April.
I wonder if it would be good to set the brief of a film which is a kind of, you know, has
crossover.
A crossover element to it.
Yeah. That isn't
what
Space
could that
Jam.
Be?
That isn't Space Jam.
Or Looney Tunes back in action.
So, or Rugrats Go Wild, sorry.
All valid options, but no doubt you've got other ones, listeners. So next week, then, we will be discussing Hook with Adam and Matt Thrift.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll also be looking at Wes Anderson's new film, the very eagerly anticipated Isle of Dogs, and Steven Spielberg's Ready Player One. I certainly am ready for Ready Player One. I haven't seen it yet. You two have, but not a word.
Nope.
And Film Club, as we say, Hook.
Yes.
Right. Do get watching Hook and let us know your thoughts. Email address truthandmovies@tcolondon.com, Twitter LWLies, and various other outlets. Anything else before people roll along to see you at the Genesis Cinema on Thursday night?
Maybe just another little nudge for those excited about seeing Wes Anderson's Isle of Dogs, that there is an issue of a magazine,
Ooh.
Little White Lies, out on the shelves now, available to purchase.
It's dog-themed.
And it's dog-themed. It's very. If you love dogs, seek it out. You might like it.
Okay, good one. There's also an Isle of Dogs ramen pop-up bar.
Yeah, and if you're in London for the next 2 weeks, from this Friday until beginning of April.
Have you been?
No, I'm going tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's going to be props and puppets and sets from the film that you can
really?
Go and have a look at. Yeah, yeah. And a life-size ramen bar serving ramen noodles.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it sounds quite fun. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. Where is that, Hannah?
It's at the Strand in London. So sorry if you're not from London. I feel like we're always really London-centric. But yeah, if you've got nothing
Other
better to do this Easter.
All right, then. Well, that's it for now. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Hannah and David, for being here. We'll see you again next week, although not in this case you specifically. But this has been a 7 Digital production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.